This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
We are good to go.
And Karina Anglada.
Thanks for listening, by the way.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Sports Creative Podcast. Our group is so excited for this next episode. We've got Nate Vaughn, senior producer of original content and creative lead with the Minnesota Vikings. This episode is awesome because you get to hear how Nate turned his passion for storytelling into a career and found ways to tell stories with confidence. We unpack his approach for editing and producing and hear about his overall journey throughout the sports industry. Nate is an incredible human being, and not only is he talented creatively, but he's also looking to teach and uplift the next generation of video creatives. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode, because we sure did ourselves.
All right, you want to say the time, Karina?
Oh, yeah. Forgot about this. It's been a minute. Let's go. 54.
Is this where we all clap?
Yeah. That would have sounded really good on time to me. Okay.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go.
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step by step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
I am so excited for today's episode. We've got my friend and colleague. Feels like you're a colleague, even though we never worked together. We've got Nate Vaughn from the Minnesota Vikings, senior producer of original content and creative lead. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm super excited for this.
Thanks for having me. This is longtime listener, first time caller, as they say. So happy to be on.
I love it. So we're going to get into your background, I think, in a little bit. But for folks listening in, it's the middle of summer. We're in, the June months. So what do you have going on in this off season right now?
Not a whole lot, which is nice to say. It's a nice chance to, get back into the real world, take some time off. And I say that as we're recording this in my office at work. But trust me when I say we're taking it a little bit easier right now. We're in we get the week of the 4th of July off. So have that to look forward to every year. But leading up to that, we just finished up our off-season practices, which are, we cover that daily, but even the coverage of that is a little bit lower stakes than anything during the season. So it's kind of my favorite time of year, honestly, because everybody's in a good mood. You're not worried about wins and losses or the current standings or anything. You're outside. The weather's awesome. Everybody's excited for the season. So it's a good building time, to use a coaching metaphor, I guess. But things are good right now. Not that they aren't during the season, but things are great right now.
No, understood. And you've been with the Vikings 10 years, over 10 years now. So I'm so curious, share with the folks listening what your role is, because you specialize specifically in original content for the team. So would love to hear just your perspective on what your role is, and during the season and even the off season, what your day to day looks like. I'm sure it varies.
Sure. Yeah, it does. I'll say for those dedicated listeners, Malia Pearson, who was on a while back, hinted a little bit at some of what we do, because our groups certainly work closely together. So shout out, Malia.
What
we do in our original content department, that's kind of what we consider like our access and storytelling content. So mic'd ups, we have a show called The Voyage, which is our like documentary series that, you know, everybody's got a version of these days. So it's really been cool to see different teams build their versions of that show or those series from afar. Those are our two big main ones. We've also had a series called Field Access that we do, which is a more like raw look at game day. So built around sound from the field. Those are kind of the three main ones. We also are the point people for our post-game speeches, which thanks to our head coach and his willingness to get into it after wins, is those always perform very well. And obviously, we got a win to shoot those, so props to the team for winning those games. And then coach definitely loves that moment. We do the best we can to amplify those moments too. So that's the brief kind of run through of some of our like main pieces of content, and certainly help out with a lot of other projects throughout the week as well.
So take us back to how you got into what you do today and maybe why you decided to specialize more on the original content side of things.
Mm-hmm. Sure. When I started, which is, over 10 years ago, I actually had an intern season with the Vikings back in 2012. So that for those Vikings fans, that was Adrian Peterson's MVP season.
Wow. That's
which
cool.
is a while back now, but yeah. Back when they, you know, entertained the thought of a non-quarterback being an MVP. But back then, we had a group of like four or five producers that were just producers that just did everything. I imagine a lot of teams have very similar, you know, beginnings when at the beginnings of their departments. So mostly focused on press conferences, making sure those went okay. Any highlights we could shoot during the games was kind of a bonus, and we could do some fun things there. And then I actually got a full-time job with the Kansas City Chiefs, which I know a few of you know people that have been or are currently there, learned a ton there as far as like storytelling. You know, shooting interviews, conducting interviews, how to like media manage, just like tons of like the fundamentals. I was there only for two seasons, and it was the most I will have ever learned in my career, probably anywhere else. So took what I learned there, came back here, and with that in mind, you know, was able to kind of build out a little more stability in our like storytelling type content. And so eventually that turns into shows called Beyond the Gridiron, which turns into The Voyage, but then also, you know, strengthens like how we shoot like mic'd up and standalone interviews and things like that. And you just kind of like build as a department on like what people know, you know, or the experiences that they bring. That's kind of how that's my lane, but there's like seven different versions of that to build what the Vikings Entertainment Network is today. That's kind of been my path, how I got to where I am today.
I'm so curious in listening to you kind of explain that journey and even how the Vikings are kind of set up, and similar to Justin's question, like, from when you started to now, it sounds like you and the organization is very intentional with the types of content and like a priority on storytelling, really, in a lot of different ways. How has everything, do you feel like, changed in regards to long form specifically, like maybe from when you were an intern to now?
Sure. Yeah. Great question. I think a lot has changed. I guess, again, I can only speak to like my department, things like that. But over the past handful of years, we've really developed our strategy side of things. Not necessarily like for us producers personally, but we've built out that side of that department. So we have people in charge of like figuring out like how long these videos should be, like and essentially like the unknown recipe is like, how much effort should we be spending on these compared to like the performance that it's going to get, kind of regardless.
Right. Your return on investment.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's always like an ongoing thing. And I'd be lying if I said we had that figured out, but that I guess that would be kind of the general area in which things have changed the most. We still try to do like the best quality content that we can, obviously, but keeping in mind more of like, how much time should we be spending on this? How many people should we be involving in this? Is this, we don't want to say we check the box on anything, but is there anything that we need to like kind of breeze through a little bit quicker to get to some of these heavier lifts and things like that? So I'd say that's probably the area in which things have changed the most over the years.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like because...
Do you guys hear similar things from other people?
Yeah, you know, I think we've talked about this. Like, I feel like strategy, you mentioned strategy, and I feel like that has come up a lot more. And at least for me, what I've observed with a lot of folks on the pod is there has been more specialization, I think, in types of content, right, that is being created. Or you might specialize, like you're a producer, editor, and videographer, you can kind of, you do be a jack or a jackie of all trades, but you might specialize and do like social edits versus sure. long form versus, I think, Justin and Darius, I don't know if you feel similarly, but that's what I feel like I've observed.
Yeah, for sure. I think teams have grappled with the fact that a lot of them, especially in the NFL, have had, at least when I was at the Bears, we had a broadcast department. And I was in the digital side trying to build like the digital content. And I left before like social media. We handled social media and stuff there. And then at the Celtics, they didn't have anything really. They were starting a digital department only. So I think it just depends on where people are, how they start and what was there initially and how they have grown those departments over time. I mean, from game entertainment to broadcast to social, feels like those have kind of been the three, but now it kind of feels like everyone's trying to figure out how they can make better use and repurpose content over the overall, all of their platforms so that they're best utilizing everybody's time and energy to create content that works in multiple places, even if it's different people that jump in to grab it. I think that's the biggest challenge that I think a lot of teams are facing over the last couple of years is the how can we optimize and organize to make this make sense for the content operations to work to the best of their abilities.
And it's certainly not always a super clean equation, right?
Like, yeah,
people would like to suggest that it is, and it's easier to say than it is to do all the time. But you know, just like anything, you got to go through reps, practice things, and figure out what works best. I will say too, Karina, you mentioned like sort of a transition towards more specialization. Like that has not been an easy thing, you know, for us like longer term producers. Yeah. 'Cause like I mentioned, the way that I came up was you got to learn how to do everything because we're all doing everything.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to get better at things, but we also just got to like handle things. And not that that's not the case now, but there is departments are bigger. You've got people focusing on like way more specific things and it's making those things better. But, you know, when you come from a background of like, no, there's a ton of value in like knowing everything. That can create some kind of weird moments, growing moments every now and then, right?
Oh, definitely.
As you're staffing up, do you try and hire people that can do a little bit of everything and some people that are specifically really good at one specific thing that then you try and help train in another area or two so that you have flexibility? How do you think about all of that?
That's a great question.
The
layup answer is it depends on the position, but I don't hire a ton of positions. I hire like an associate each year, which is a blast, and hopefully we can get to that later. But like, so in a position like that, like it's based on vibes, right? Or for lack of a better way to put it, like you got to have a good attitude. It's got to come through. You got to show us that you're gonna have an interest in what you're doing in our department, but also like the bigger thing is like you got to be willing to learn whatever we're going to throw at you.
Do you consider that is that like a seasonal position?
Yeah, okay. It is. So each year, we just had our new class start in June this year. So it's June through May. is the setup for our organization. And that's worked out. I mean, that's been such a cool thing for our department. We started that in 2022, I think, was the first year we did it as part of like our like associate program here at the Vikings. We've always had like interns and like part-time people and stuff like that, but this is more of a, like an actual program. It's got the structure, it's got the start date and end date, which I think is like important and fair, you know, for transparency for people trying to look for a next job compared to hoping they last here. We've had some, like, just in the few years that we've had it, like, we've had some awesome, awesome associates, and they've landed a lot of gigs very quickly, if not before their time here is up. So, shout out to some of those people. Hopefully, a few are listening.
That's awesome, and I love that there's those opportunities too. To almost, you know, you mentioned you began as an intern with the Vikings, and now to see, you know, your growth and leading, you know, the original content team and doing such cool stuff is amazing. And I think that's good advice for anyone looking in. I'd like to get into, I'm a docu-style nerd, and you've mentioned some of the you know, properties that the Vikings have with like this voyage, the episodes of the voyage. For those that don't know, break the voyage down and what that looks like as you're crafting each episode kind of, you know, throughout the season.
Sure. I will, one of my faults is underselling things, so I'll try to beef it up a little bit, but like, it is not all that different than like what a lot of teams do, like I already mentioned. Cause that's what like fans are craving, right? They have their favorite teams, and they want to see what goes on behind the scenes, you know? Mm-hmm. So like for us, that equation is combination of interviews. We put a lot into like our cameras and our sound during game days, our mic'd ups, things like that. We have access to our like coaches team meetings for once a week. So we're not in there for every single meeting all week long. That would probably not even be a best use of our resources, candidly.
Right. I'm sure they'd be very interesting.
Oh, though. Yeah, absolutely. Like, even so, I'm kind of going off track already, but like, some of you have probably seen the quarterback series or the receiver series on Netflix featuring two of our players, you know, and they do some of the things that, like, yes, we would like to do, but also like don't always have the capacity to do, you know. They're focusing on three or four players in the NFL, and we have a team full of people that we want to, you know, kind of share the love for. Right. So they're doing things that, like, you know, being in the receiver's meeting room or the quarterback's meeting room. They'll probably shoot that a couple of times throughout the season. And it's good stuff. We kind of just play by different rules than NFL films. But we want to make sure that we're sharing the love kind of to more than just our star players. Obviously, that's what's going to resonate the most if we put a clip of Justin Jefferson out there. But, you know, we've got a lot of good players on this team, we like to think. So sharing the love there. But yeah, so that's, I got off track. But so we've been doing the voyage since 2018, I think was the first season we did it. And it's kind of shifted a little bit throughout the years. COVID certainly was its own challenge, like many teams experienced with their content around that time. But so it shifted from an in-season to an off-season version, back to an in-season version.
And when you say that, you mean like the time it was produced? Or
produced and published, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So
got it.
We currently do it in-season now, which is like more of a lift, certainly. The first time we did it in our off-season, we kind of like struck gold, I think. We had a really good season. It was the first season with our new head coach. And so the season ended, we were able to put out tons of good content during the season, knowing that we were going to put together the series following the season. And so, you know, like, things worked out pretty well up until, you know, every team would like to win the Super Bowl. So that's the perfect ending. It doesn't always work out, but,
right.
but it allowed us to really, like, the idea of doing it after the season allowed us to view storylines through the scope of the entire season. So when you're doing things like weekly or biweekly during the season, if there's not a whole lot of juice like in those couple of weeks, you got to kind of like make something out of a storyline that's really maybe not a huge deal in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it can't be a cool story or whatever, but like when you do it after the season, you know what happened, right? You know what was a big deal and what was really not that big of a deal, and you can kind of build that up in to sort of like appropriate measures, if you want to think of it that way. Now we do it in season for a lot of different reasons. Still able to capitalize on a lot of the same things, but it's been interesting. It's been a lot of learning, kind of like shifting from those different methods of, and timing of when we're producing it.
So when you're producing this content now in season, like thinking of how you're talking about waiting till the end of the season, you kind of know how the story unfolds and then you can tell a really good story and how everything fits together and decide from a 50,000 foot view of what makes sense to include in there. As you're going week by week, are you trying to focus on, you're talking about spreading the wealth across the team. Are you trying to cherry pick based on the player's performance, or are you trying to cherry pick based on who has other stories to tell that you would like to tell? How do you think about how all that fits together now that you're doing it in season?
No, that's a great question. I would say it's kind of 50-50. You know, like you've got to be ready to capitalize on the big things that happen when they do happen. But also finding ways to work in some of those storylines that like are lesser known or players that are not as popular. Like if you think about it from a practical standpoint, like for us, like a storyline, like a player like CJ Ham, actually, Malia mentioned in her podcast, he's been around forever. He's our fullback. He's a very like, he's a good glue guy, also a good football player, but not like a star. So if we want to find a way to work him in, that's going to take a little more planning on our part, maybe some shoots in the off season to like highlight his family or like what he's like, so that we can have sort of like almost a prepackaged segment for him, knowing that like there's probably not going to be a game where he's like where they're talking about him on all the post game shows. You know, that's probably not going to happen because that's not the nature of his position, but it doesn't mean he doesn't have a good story and he's not a good player. So for a situation like that, it kind of lends itself more to like off the field shoots. And certainly off the field shoots are going to do well again, Justin Jefferson as well, but everybody's wanting to do those. And so that includes us, but also it kind of makes us flex some different muscles, you know, like how can we know there's going to be Justin content. How can we highlight some of the other guys knowing that the Justin stuff will kind of take care of itself a lot of times?
Yeah, that Justin, I love that question because that answers one that I had, which is how do you select and identify storylines? So I love seeing, you know, yes, there's what happens on the field, but looking for opportunities beyond that. How does the pitching process, if anything, work? Because I remember, you know, my first big girl job with the Detroit Pistons, you know, there were a couple of us producer editor types, and you know, we would go to PR and say, hey, we've got this idea, and they'd be like, based on our current record, we would not like to do that, right? So how do you pitch ideas as an organization, as an internal group, and what other, you know, departments, if any, are you working with to select those storylines?
Yeah, that's a great question. Very timely too. We're going through what we call our pitch process for in-season content right now. And so the quick answer to your question is we are trying to get better at being more proactive about ideas that we want to do, whether it's during the season or off season. Doesn't mean we're always going to be 100% prepared for anything that pops up. We still got to build in that space, right? But the idea is, especially like recurring content, we each year we pitch and sort of repitch the recurring content that we want to do. So it functions as not only an opportunity to like think of new ideas, but also audit the stuff that you do each year. And so I take that part, the audit part, honestly, a little bit more seriously, because a lot of what we do is gonna be approved to do. Like it's kind of like the meat and potatoes of a sports team, right? You need access, you need mic'd up, like that stuff is pretty given. You can do that a lot of different ways, and that's on us to figure out. But like, so I really focus with our team on the audit process, like after the season is done. Like, what were some of the tough parts? What can we change to be more prepared for some of those situations? Or like, what are we wasting our time on? You know, like what do we need to ditch? You know, whether it's a content series or just like a part of Voyage, you know, a certain angle. Like what are we spending a lot of time on that maybe it doesn't feel like it's resonating or doesn't feel worth it? Or like what is really performing? Like what should we lean into? And then we also like we look at what other teams do. I mean, everybody does that. Reached out to a handful of teams about their versions of Voyage this year, instead of just watching from afar, like actually like ask them like how they do it. And that's been like a really cool experience this year, like learning from other teams and their challenges. Because even though like a lot of the content turns out pretty similar, or like it seems like it's all the same, teams get to it in a lot of different ways. And I kind of knew that, but like talking to them, you know, like you really do sort of understand that more clearly.
We talked about how a lot of the industry has changed over time, right? How much are you guys paying attention to like data and analytics from like the fan perspective to kind of help you guys plan what type of content, how much of a focus on this versus something else?
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a huge part of our like department's growth and development over the past few years. I will say personally, like it's allowed, like having people's jobs be that has allowed me to still like focus on the content that we're doing now. Probably a lot of departments don't have that amount of resources or that amount of people to do stuff like that. So I am grateful for that. But as far as like hiring and staffing, like we have definitely put a lot into like our social digital strategy, like how things are performing, like what are current trends. And like they're always communicating with people at the NFL, especially like from a YouTube standpoint. Like they have a very good relationship with the league, and the league is also very helpful to make recommendations for types of content that they've seen perform well, or different, even things like things beyond my knowledge, but like how a thumbnail can affect the performance of a YouTube piece, or like how titling it can drastically change the performance of. So there's a lot there that I know enough about to mention in a podcast like this, but don't know the ins and outs of it, which I'm actually grateful for. It allows me to still focus on the content itself, knowing that there's people that work in my department that are working to figure out how that can perform the best it can.
I love that. That's cool. I feel like there's definitely a movement towards a lot more of the analytics. And I love your example, even with the thumbnail, that is part of the storytelling process, right? Because that is before someone even opens the video, listens to the video, that's what they're looking at before they even start playing it. So the story is almost defined in that title, in that thumbnail. That's a really good example. I love that.
You were talking about changes, right? And what you would like to keep, what you would like to ditch and all that. This piece is sponsored, as I assume a lot of your content is sponsored.
Yeah.
How far or at what point do you have to think about, okay, well, if we're going to change this and this, we need to go talk to sponsorships, and how involved does that process get? Or are you just changing things mostly in your wheelhouse of what you can change and adjust, and it doesn't really impact the overall piece and episodes that you're doing?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. I will say, if we're talking about Voyage specifically, it is sponsored, but it's a sponsor that is pretty hands-off as they come. So
love that.
Grateful for that. But it can work the other way. Like, there's a lot of like more like one-off pieces or shorter series that we'll do throughout the season that are either NFL connections or like specific to Minnesota. You know, that they can work. It's just you got to have like as much information and expectations up front as possible from their end, and like be clear about that from our end too. And again, I'll make clear that I'm not on the front lines with the partnerships folks and partner relations. So I'll stumble through my explanation here, but when pieces like that have been successful, at least in from what I've noticed, is when there's like clear communication, like from the start. You could probably apply that to a lot of different aspects of life. But as long as like the partner understands like what we're looking to do, and we understand like what the partner is looking for and like what they need or what they feel like they need in a piece of content, whether it's just a logo on an intro screen or whether it's like, you know, interacting with a product in a piece, like something more like a more physical interaction. As long as we know that up front, like, yeah, it might not be like at the top of our, like, we might not be in love with the concept, but it, as long as they're clear from the start and we can pull it off, like, it always works out.
Yeah. So I know that you're not on the sales side, but yeah. I do have a
thankfully
sales
kind
of adjacent question. So okay. When you're producing a long form product like this, is the conversation with sales like they tell you, hey, here are some people that we may be able to pitch this idea? Like, are you kind of ideating around, oh, well, I think that this type of sponsor could work for this show or this segment, or like kind of how's that pitch process? So if someone is looking to do a long form show, whether that's in college, whether that's in the pros, how do you kind of set the product up to find the right partner for it?
Sure. Yeah. For us, a lot of what we do is recurring and kind of like bread and butter. And so people have a pretty good understanding of what it is. And so like our partnerships team understands pretty clearly, like they can represent it pretty fairly to a potential sponsor. But for someone trying, like, starting something new, you know, and looking for a sponsor, like, good luck. That I mean, like, you will find someone, but like, that you're flexing a lot of different muscles when you're doing that. So my advice, I guess, would be just like know exactly like what you want to do, know the vision that you have for the project, and sell that to them as you're looking for a sponsor. Like, if it's an access piece, like be confident about like the value of that access. Because if they're like, you know, if that potential sponsor is not, you know, doesn't know exactly what they're looking for, they're going to be sold on like the passion of the idea that you have. And they're going to be like, oh yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. Let's do that. You know, I'm probably making it sound way easier than it is in reality, but I think like with a lot of things, if you have passion and like a belief in like what you're doing or what you're selling, that's going to come through in one way or another. And it's only going to benefit you, obviously, in the project itself, but in all the like auxiliary parts of explaining it to people, selling it to people, bringing new people into the mix when you're exciting and building a team to do a project like that. You got to find what you like about it and stick to that as you're explaining it and selling it. I don't know if that really answers your question, Darius.
Yes. It does. And the reason I ask that is because sales is becoming, I mean, sales has always been around sport, right? Whether it was on the high school level, having, you know, sponsorship on a fence or a magazine that they may put together. But now on the digital side, you know, we talk about the changing of the landscape. Even if it is a new product, you should be able to go in and be able to sell the vision of what you're trying to do. None of this stuff is really, like, you're not creating something brand new that no one has ever done before. Like, we've all done mic'd ups before. We've all done, you know, meetings. Or you see what, you know, you're at the Vikings. Oh, let's see what the 49ers have done. They, you know, or the Cowboys or somebody else. You could at least use someone who has a basis already to be able to, you know, go in. But I think a lot of times when we're trying to gain sponsorship for a product, some people try to lead with numbers versus the vision of something because they feel like, oh, well, you know, what are the views? It's like the views doesn't matter if you don't have a good product to sell.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it for me, like a lot of that has, like, I've relied on a lot of people in our department to be like the numbers, the views, the interactions, to pay a little bit more attention to that. Knowing my personality, like I'm lucky we have a big department that we have people that can pay attention to that a little bit more that I don't have to. I know that's not that way everywhere. I am grateful that it's allowed me and my team to focus more on like the content we're doing, improving it. While people can keep an eye on like the YouTube comments and things like that are always super positive.
those are the best.
And you know, keep tabs on things there and let us know if there's important trends, like trends that would, you know, lend itself to an improved product. Like certainly like give us that information, but you know, as you guys are aware, it's maybe not the healthiest place to be as the producer of a piece to just like hunker down in the YouTube comments and see what's going on.
Not at all.
It's my favorite place to be. What do you mean? I would listen. That's a real thing. When I was working on the team side, I would be in the comments. And when there was good comments and positive, I would screenshot them. And, you know, I feel like it is cool because there were times that fans would chime in and be like, this is such a great series. Like, love seeing, you know, these moments. And I think that gives a sense of validation of sorts. Like, it's not quite an analytic. I mean, it is, it's a comment, it's engagement, but it feels good. I don't know if you've experienced that too.
Yeah, you're right. And thank you for pointing that out, Karina. It's not all doom and gloom down there, especially from like team accounts. Like, people that follow it are probably already fans. So a lot of it is going to be more positive. But like, I will say, like, one of the producers here, Alex Miller, and some others first off, he's insanely talented. So shout out to Alex for being a great producer and editor. But he's also very in touch with, like, he's a good like person. Like, he is very good at being in touch with people and like approachable with ideas and things like that. And like knowing kind of like what affirmations, if you want to think of it that way, that people need, and so like we have what we call a win wall here. We've dedicated like an internal TV channel to like just for our like TV and our break room, highlighting some of the stuff we've done. You know, whether that's a photo, whether it's a content series, press conference that performed really well, like stadium shoot, but then also like not just highlighting that, like, because we're all proud of a lot of that stuff, but then like showing some of those like notable like YouTube comments and stuff to,
that's, you know, cool,
kind of hit us in the face with some of those affirmations when you have people like me telling you not to go into the YouTube comments. You're right, there are some gold nuggets in there too sometimes. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's true, and it's all about you as a person, right? Like, if you are not going to have a good time, like swimming through comments on social media,
yeah,
you got to know that about yourself. But if that helps you, you know, go ahead, check it out.
Definitely.
So another question I have is, you've been doing this show for a while. Mm-hmm. At what point, or is there ever a point where, you know, the people who know the show, that you're kind of putting an emphasis on trying to attract, you know, new people? For a person like, let's use me as an example. Let's say I've never heard of The Voyage. Like, how are you trying to get in front of new people, or do you kind of stay in that? If you're not a fan of the team, we don't really care. For a person like me, I love seeing other teams that I am not a fan of. If it's great content, I'm on board to watch a whole season of it, right? But for people who are not like that, how are you getting in front of new people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess first and foremost, and again, Malia referenced this a little bit in hers, we do have like fan personas that we kind of use as tools to frame up different fans and their approaches to our content and the team in general. And a lot of the content that our group does is for those like crunched in fans, like fans that are there through and through. They're going to watch anything we put out, which, but that doesn't mean that parts of, use Voyage as an example, it doesn't mean like parts of that show can't be interesting to other people. Like we've seen some traction on pieces we do that feature people as people, or players and coaches as people, and also like players and coaches that people aren't as familiar with. Like now everybody knows who our head coach is, Kevin O'Connell, but like his first year, like people didn't, I mean, people knew the name because he's obviously an NFL head coach, but people even here didn't even know what he was like, you know, when he started. But like through like team meetings and doing shoots with his family and things like that, like it comes across like very clearly, like how he acts, how he leads, things like that. And so I think that is interesting to people outside of the Vikings. When you can learn about, like you see shots of coach on the sidelines, but you don't know anything about him. But then when you see how he leads a team meeting, like that stuff certainly resonates, and explains why he was, you know, coach of the year this past year is a pretty good example of that. But then also like off the field shoots, like just last night, there was like a fan account that, resurfaced a segment we did with Harrison Smith, one of our players a few years back. And he's coming back again this year. He's one of our more veteran players, or is our most veteran player. And we did a shoot with him at his house as he built like a stretching exercising contraption in his basement, just out of like wood and screws and stuff. Like,
wow.
It was a fun piece. But like that comes through, like shooting it and editing it, like it comes through in the final product. And it's cool when you see some of that like resonate even like years afterwards. Like that fan account was like, no wonder he's back for whatever year. Like he's doing this stuff in his free time, like twisting and turning in his basement, doing all kinds of stuff.
That's funny. That actually, I love that example. And it makes me wonder, do you have a favorite piece or project that you're most proud of that was, you know, so fun to edit and put together and produce? Like, are there any projects like that stand out for you?
Sure. Yeah. The, lots of them. I mean, there's, when you're around long enough, you're a part of a lot of projects that end up pretty cool, whether you're leading them or not. But, one of the most proud of is the Voyage example, that first year we switched to doing it after the season. Like I mentioned earlier, benefited from a lot of like a very positive season, a lot mm-hmm. in like every single game we won by like a walk-off field goal every single time. Like it was a crazy year.
Well, that was the magical year with the Bills.
Yeah. Bills win. That was like one of 10 games like that. Like that was obviously yeah.
That's
most
insane.
Crazy, but like, yeah. So that, yeah. Being able to capture that season, and then have the whole thing play out and then pick like the craziest games that are going to be like the bigger focuses was actually kind of tough that year. But like, being the first year we did it after the season, we had a really good group of producers that year. Really good associate, Avneet Gill, who's gone on to great things now with
Avneet. She's with,
yeah, Karina.
Angel City now.
Yeah, she's with Angel City, living it up back in Cali where she grew up. So she's very happy out there. But so she was a full blown producer on this, even as an associate, because we needed that.
Yeah.
And like, because the season was so cool, the final product ended up really cool. We're like, how can we make a bigger deal out of this? And this is not really my like expertise of like blowing things up to be bigger than they are, but we were like, let's try it. So we ended up having like a screening for the first episode with season ticket members, like in our facility. We have like the team meeting room was like also an auditorium theater kind of set up. So brought season ticket members in. We had a partner, Great Home Shoes was the partner at that time for that series. They came in, did like shoe fittings for all the season ticket members so they could like get shoes. Like it just worked out. It checked a lot of boxes that like I don't even like think about 99% of the time. And then they did like a Q&A session with all four of us producers afterwards, which was really cool. Very proud of like the whole group and how they produced the piece, but then also handled all that kind of extra stuff. Another very different, like proud moment, if I could, is like in 2020, it was the year of COVID, certainly. So a lot going on, or maybe a lot not going on at NFL facilities, you know, a lot of different challenges. But also up here, it was when George Floyd was murdered, not to have things take a turn, but it was certainly a very serious, confusing, emotional, just like strong, weird time up here. And a lot, you know, most of our players are not from here, but they certainly have a connection to here. So a lot of them felt like they had to do something or say something and didn't really know how. Like a lot of energy and passion that people, including like us staff members, didn't really know the best like way to express it or like what we could do, you know. I'm just proud of like the few players that did want to like make statements or like you know, express how they were feeling, like we were a resource for them and what they wanted to say in a platform, and the Vikings team was always very supportive of any players that wanted to speak up on their feelings on it. So certainly a super negative situation. But like I was proud of like that we were there for our players and able to provide a resource for them in a tough time. Two pretty drastically different situations, but important nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, I think that alludes to just all of what we've been talking about, right? How to craft a storyline, paying attention to not just what is happening with said organization or team, but the state you're in, right? And I think all of that is relevant to your job as a producer, is, you know, thinking about not just the storyline for the Vikings, but you're also thinking about the brand holistically and what that means to people, everyday people that are, you know, watching this content. So I think that's a great example. I would like to get into, on that same note, for anybody that's, you know, trying to aspire to get into a position like yours, what tips do you have for them to craft a good, well-told story? Like, what are some tangible things that can help? It's a tough question, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Tangible thing, like small, like editing, like tricks,
editing, like even producing, whatever, okay. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I've really grown to enjoy is like the, like interviewing people, whether it's players or staff members, coaches, whatever. Mm-hmm. like learning how to like frame up responses for them. Like they certainly get better at it over time with media training and stuff like that, of like how to respond in interviews or like how to reframe the question, right? Like you guys have all been there, but like learning how to do that is like a very helpful skill, and it's not hard. But just don't be afraid to have an interview subject rephrase something, like after they're finished with their thought. Don't be afraid to be like, hey, I really like what you said there. Can we start that again? Just do the like the first part and let's rephrase the question so it's like a clean edit. And they may not understand like what you're saying, but they'll do it, you know. that would be one piece of advice. I think like from an editing standpoint, like some of my biggest things are like pretty simple. I'm big on letting things breathe. And that's more of like a style thing. And it's not a super popular style with like social media, TikTok and things like that. And I understand that. But I just think there's so much, like you can do so much with space, whether it's like visual space or like audio space, like bringing music up, dropping music out, just letting something sit for a second. There's not a lot of that outside of like movies now, because everything is so quick. I think like I'm really into that, and I think that helps the piece kind of feel a little more full. That would be a few things. Some other small things, like I've learned to save my color grading until the very end. Like I don't even mess with it, because you're just like it. I mean it. It's tempting, right? Like, because you shot something and you know it like looked good in the viewfinder, and it's gonna look good when it's graded. Try to resist that until like you can like get like the content itself figured out. Otherwise, you're gonna spend a lot of time doing that. That's one thing I've learned about myself. So,
yeah, kind of on the same lines of what Karina was talking about, advice. In the changing world of creative, especially in storytelling, a lot of the people who are, you know, just getting into a full-time role or seeking a full-time role, a lot of them have grown up in the 5 to 30 second world. How do you kind of navigate that to get them like in a position where they realize that long form is still a great thing? I mean, I tell people all the time when they're like, oh, attention spans, it's like your attention span is locked in when you're watching Netflix or Hulu or if you go to a movie. So this is no different. So how do you kind of navigate through that when you're, you know, I know you guys talked about what you look for in a person that you're hiring, but kind of helping pull them through the mindset of it has to be these short things versus let the story breathe and not rush it.
Yeah. I don't know that I have an awesome answer for that, to be totally honest with you. It's certainly, I wouldn't call it like a challenge, cause it's just a different style, right? Like it's what people are used to. And like, I want to express like what I know or like what I enjoy about it, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that is the way that it has to be now. Like there are certain projects where I can like show, like I'm not going to show them every episode of everything we've ever done when there's a new person that comes in, and cause that's going to be overwhelming and pretty boring probably for that person. But like, if you can show like how effective, you know, building some of that space can be, you know, building moments that aren't just like, fast paced cuts and all information, not to sound like too like metaphorical or whatever, but like building space for like to be able to like feel a piece like that, that exists in a lot fewer places in sports media today. I think like, I don't have an agenda here, but like, you know, like so much is like talking head stuff, less on the team side, but more on like larger media side that, you know, I think, and so like that performs well. So there's certainly a time and place for that, but I don't know. I just feel like that's not what fans need from us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, yes. We can do there's a lot that, of that out there. Don't need yeah. to add to that.
Yeah. Right. And what's different from what is already out there.
Yeah. Right.
You build good content, people are going to watch it. Like, you may have to do a little nurturing and a little massaging to, like, get it in front of them. But, like you said, there are ways and things that you can do to get it in front of the people that it's meant for. What's some of the best advice that you've received along the way?
Ooh, that's good. I'm not always good at thinking of those, so that's one I put some thought to ahead of time. So I'll give my secret out on that. But from an editing standpoint, I learned a lot from in Kansas City from Jodane Massad. Just in the 2 years that I was there. And some people listening will probably recognize that name. He's with NFL Films now, doing big time innovative stuff. He's brilliant, brilliant person. So I learned a lot from him. And one of the things I learned from him was, like, specifically like editing long form stuff, is if you're on the fence about a clip, no matter what stage of the production you're on, if you're on the fence about it, get rid of it.
Love that.
It like, you're connected to it because you shot it or you've been editing with it, like, you know everything that's said, but like the viewer, like, they're watching your piece and they're only going to know whatever you put in that final piece. So if you're on the fence about something that, like, you think is applicable but, like, just kind of like is, like, repetitive or anything like that, or you don't know if it totally fits, just get rid of it. And like, if it sticks with you and it sticks in your head and you think about it later on in the edit process, that's when you know you can go find it and put it back in if you really need it. But like 95% of the time, you're not going to need to do that. Just dump it and move on.
That's okay. Hold on. We got to pause for a second because I do think
that's really good.
Yeah, that's amazing. But I'm thinking about myself selfishly and being like, no, but it's such a beautiful shot, right? Like, yeah. how do you like train yourself to say, okay, this is relevant to the story or it's not, you know what yeah. I mean?
Yeah. It's not easy. I still struggle with it, but like what we found here that we do with our group is, we kind of like check each other. That's an easier way to do it. So like working with, I mentioned Alex Miller or Ryan O'Neill in our department or anybody else in our department, like, well, especially if we're stuck, if we're like, I think this is good, but like, I don't know where to go with it next, or I don't know if it really works. I think it works, but I'm not totally sure. Like, I'll watch a piece that Alex does, and so I'm not connected to it.
Right. Like, a fresh set of eyes.
Yeah. I'd be like, oh, dropped it. You don't need that. And he's like, okay, thank you. Like, I wasn't sure, you know, and like people, like I asked people to do that for me. Like, I feel like having a fresh set of eyes, like you said, Karina, having someone who's interested in the success, obviously, of the product, but not as deeply rooted in it as you, mm-hmm. the producer, mm-hmm. like that's worked really well for us. So reach out to people if you need help trimming the fat.
Yeah, collaborative culture sounds very healthy environment. I like hearing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm glad that resonated with you guys. That's like one of my first tips I always tell people, and it's not like a revolutionary idea by any means, but it does help you, you know, keep moving forward on a project. If you're like, I don't know, just get rid of it and move on. And if you still remember it later, make sure you build your project in a way that you can find that clip later if you need it. But chances are you probably won't.
So that sounds like duplicating sequences to me.
A lot of that. Yeah.
What's on that note, what's the highest number of versions, like revisions, that you've had on a project?
I don't know. My answer would probably be like around 10. But like, I don't know if that's actually true, because as you guys are probably aware, the more times you have to go back and adjust something, the less likely it is the file names actually make sense. It turns into like, you know, maybe a few expletives in the export name, or
a different version,
or don't use that underscore, use this. So tracking those specific versions of things gets harder as you get more embedded in a project, or the closer to a finish line you think you might be. But I would guess probably around 10. Like, we're not doing, you know, national Super Bowl commercials, right? We're not working with, you know, high stakes clients and stuff like that. I guess we are a high stake client, but like, we know like the team that we're doing content on. Like, there's, for a lot of, most of the content we do, there's not a insane amount of back and forth. We have to get things approved and things like that. But, you know, working with like the football side, the approval process is usually just take this out. And that's kind of the end of the approval process. So there's not as much of that back and forth as if there were like a production house with a high profile client doing like a national spot or something like that.
Yeah. One time, I can't remember what project it was, but I was working with someone and sending over versions, right? And like you said, at some point you know, what version is this?
Yeah.
And so to be very arrogant and pretty clear an asshole, I just start putting really high numbers, like version 35.
Stop. Oh my God.
I love that. That's that passive aggressive stuff us Minnesotans like.
Because it was like they were being like very tedious, like, oh, well, what if we move this shot over here? And what if we, and then you send it, it's like, oh no, but what if this shot at 24.5? And I was like, version 37, version 45, version.
I love that. You gotta,
and sometimes you gotta make light of some of these situations to like really keep yourself from throwing stuff all over the room, because, you know, feedback and, you know, corrections can get out of hand, right? Especially
internally.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
When there's not like money changing hands.
Yeah, exactly. Like, right. It's not like, you know, a freelancer where you got 3 revisions and we're done before there's, you know, an add-on cost of sorts.
And a lot of times now I'll ask, you know, especially if it's a certain client, I was like, who is the last person that this, like, who's the final approver? Because that could make a world of difference. If I send Karina something, Karina's going to have some changes that she would like.
And yeah,
then we get that approved. Then we send it to Justin. Justin's going to have something that maybe Karina didn't like or she liked, and then now you have to go back. Then we send it to Nate. If Nate's the final person, like, now we've gone through 3 rounds where we could have just said, okay, make sure that everybody's on the same list. And also, if all of us are on the project, we're not making any changes until we have all seen, because you have sometimes, especially if it's done via email, that a person, I'll put all 4 of us on it, but then Nate only responds to me. And so the rest of the team doesn't see those. And so that's kind of one of those internal things where you have to make sure that everyone who has any say so, you know, because I may come from a technical side, Karina may come from some, hey, this is actually what we can't do from a sponsorship side. And those are all important. So it's not to say that one's more important than the other, but you have to know, like, this has to go to this set of eyes and not just a random person who will have some input just because they think that they, and sometimes people make input. We've talked about this on the show. Sometimes people make changes just to make changes, just to say that they had input. Oh, you know, that was my idea. Like, who cares? Like, did it matter? Did it make the piece better? Or,
well, on that note, though, like, Nate, are you the final say?
No.
Who's the final say?
No.
Who has the final say? I'm curious.
So a lot of what we do, like I said, like our mic'd up and our access stuff. So football side does need to sign off on final products of a lot of those. So
yeah.
Is that one person on the football side, or is there like a group of?
It takes some time to figure that out. I'll be honest with you, Darius, and that probably sounds familiar maybe to some of you, but
absolutely.
I do think we are in a good spot of like with our communications team. They mm-hmm. work very closely with the football side. We certainly do too, but communications and football here at least are like very copacetic. So
and communications is like PR, public relations, or sports information for like those listening on the college side. That equipment.
Very important group.
Yeah. Certainly. So they approve a lot of our stuff. We have now like our coach like is more interested than maybe a lot of like older school coaches in like mm-hmm. what we're putting out or like what we're not putting out. Now he doesn't want to watch everything, but he has like an assistant that like kind of channels him and watches through some of that access stuff specifically. So, and then like Mike Dubs, we're in a pretty good process of like also running it by the player to make sure they're comfortable with everything. And most of the time it's totally fine. But if we're going to blast that out, like now more than ever, like players can hear about something from anyone. So we got to make sure they're comfortable with whatever we're putting out.
That's interesting that you mentioned y'all's coach. Do you feel like part of that is because he's younger, or I'm curious your perspective on like having worked with him.
Yeah.
Is that part of why he's a little bit more engaged than maybe?
I don't want to give off like he's like controlling.
Right.
Not by any means. He's just more aware of like the good and bad that can come from
content. Got it.
And how things can spread. And
And
largely for us, it's been pretty positive, you know, with a lot of wins the past handful of years. And mm-hmm. So that we haven't really had any like tough situations, you know, really in that regard. And same goes with our general manager, also young as general managers go, and has a lot of respect for our department and like creatives in general, which is awesome. And so with that comes a lot of trust and maybe a few questions, but not like loaded questions, just like, is there a reason you did this? Would love to maybe talk about this. And we're like, yeah, great. Yeah. So, awesome. And that come like the previous regime, like was a little older school across the board, the head coach and GM. So mm-hmm. maybe that kind of is why that kind of stands out to me probably a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure.
Just the differences between those two.
I mean, it comes back to what we were talking about, like internal communications, just generally, right? Like team culture, brand, organization, priorities, like it changes. But I think the consistent thing is what we talked about earlier is like, I do think your role, Nate, is becoming more valuable to a lot of organizations, right? In these positions, because you are really crafting so much of the messaging of the overall brand. Which is kind of like, I don't know, kind of cool, but also scary at the same time. I don't know if you feel those same sentiments.
I appreciate that you see the value in my role. Not that other people do, but a little validation is always good.
Shoot, I would like, hope I do.
No. We joke, but it actually does help make a lot of editing decisions, a lot of, you know, decisions on how we cover things that we are propaganda for the team. Like it's a weird kind of twisted way to put it.
Yeah.
But if you like think about it that way, or like allow yourself to like entertain that thought,
lean into that.
We are not the local news. We are not the national news. We are
right.
We work for the team. We don't need to like shy away from the fact that we work for the team. Like doesn't mean we can't put out great quality content. It's just
totally.
It allows us to kind of narrow our focus a little bit more, if anything else.
So because we haven't talked gear yet, and if Brock was here, he would have already brought it up like 45 minutes ago, dude, I think.
Brock would blow me out of the water. I would try to explain something, and he'd be all over me and asking more in-depth questions than I could even handle. So
yeah,
I miss you, Brock. I love to reconnect sometime. Right now, I'm probably glad you're not on this podcast.
Well, I was thinking we could, Darius or Karina, if you want to get your stopwatch, we could do the game. Ooh, yeah. With gear.
Oh, yeah.
The gear game.
100%. So, Nate, you probably heard a couple episodes, and yeah, maybe if listeners, this is your first episode, thanks for listening, by the way. But we like to play a little game with our guests where we time them, and we give you a prompt of sorts, and you have to list off as many things, tangible items that are relevant to the specific question, and you have 30 seconds to do so. So we're going to keep this focused on gear.
Okay.
And in your day-to-day work with the Vikings, as you know, an original content producer, we want you to list off in 30 seconds as many pieces of gear that are essential to your day-to-day workflow. Ready? You've got 30 seconds. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, we have 4 Aria mirrors. Very grateful to have them. Awesome cameras. Boom mics, lav mics, lights, hella lights, lights everywhere. We've got cases, traveling cases. We've learned so much about traveling cases and why they're important. XLRs, let's see, tripods, oh, so many tripods and hi-hats, shoes, let's see, what else, how much time, oh, I got 4 seconds left, computers, editing software,
like, time.
11,
email, I guess, okay. I don't know, like, what, okay, what did I know I left some things out, what were you guys waiting
cards,
for me to say?
Camera cards?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank cards. Yep.
Fanny packs. Backpacks.
Headphones. Deodorant. Yep. Listen, water bottles, you're running around.
Insoles.
Darius, you're speaking my language, man. That.
I'm sure if I was playing that game, I would forget half of it because. Yeah.
What kind of lenses do you shoot on? Are you mostly zoom or are you prime?
I did leave those out. Yeah, we have a group of like Fuji lenses that we use, PL mounts that we use for most of our stuff. Now we are starting to use more primes as we can. Not as applicable on game day, although we still do a little bit. But yeah, so the Fuji lenses that we use a lot of are, you know, pretty standard 19 to 90s and 85 to 300s.
Yeah.
We do have a, we do have a 20-120 that we also have. We have some other.
Love the 20-120.
Yeah. Yeah. Best. That one's, it's a little heavier than the 19 to 90s.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Sounds like I'm hitting that's resonating
hitting
a little
hitting
bit.
The spot for us video nerds.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's gotten to a point now where whether it's primes or zoom lenses, we're like, okay, we have a great fleet of the things that we do have. Like, we're not getting a ton more cameras. So like, what other lenses can like do different things than the ones we already have? So a lot of times that means like maybe less functional ones, but like ones that are primes or ones that are more specific to certain interview setups or specialty type shots that maybe can't do quite as much and are a little bit cheaper, but they'll create some different shots than we'd normally be able to get.
Yeah, and those Cabrio lenses are amazing. I mean, they've been around for a while, but the fact that they're still standing the test of time and they're not having to like reinvent it or like come up with new things is a testament to Fuji. Shout out to Fuji.
Yeah, I feel like you can't not have them.
Yeah. They're expensive, but you know,
well, that would be a reason
your,
you can't
what your budget
them, I
is. I mean, the Vikings can probably, you know, afford it. When I was at Georgia, when we first started, you know, exploring them, we didn't have the money set aside to actually get them, but great lenses. We had a great rep who, if we had a big game coming up, she was like, hey, just let us know, we'll get it you know, get you one in your hands, just let us know. So that's another great nugget is if you can, I mean, Karina would agree with this. If you can build a great relationship with vendors, like, you know, camera people or software people or, you know, lens folks, please do, because you might be able to get your hands on something that you know, before you go and just buy something.
And they might accidentally forget to pick it up too.
They may actually, you know, forget to send you the shipping label.
Even after you email them a couple times, right. Like, pro okay, tip. Well, I guess we will just keep using it. Sure.
Justin's pro tip of the day.
Look, hook me up with that rep, Darius.
Listen, she was amazing. I went 3 years without buying anything from them. You know, I tell that story sometimes. It's like she was, and not just the Fujinon rep, but our Sony rep. Because we were in a position of transition where we were, you know, trying to do more stuff in-house, and they knew that, you know, we couldn't buy it or pull the trigger right then, or let's scrap that part. We couldn't, you know, pull the plug on it just then. So they were very helpful and patient. And sometimes, especially in this fast moving world where, you know, people, if I call Nate and say, hey, I just met you. Do you have a job or do you have something? Like, I may meet you today, and in 2 years, you know, we stay in touch and communicate. Where 2 years down the road, you may say, hey, would you be interested in, you know, taking a look at this job or something like that? So building actual relationships, not transactional ones, is very important in this industry, because you never know who can help you in a situation or someone that you can help in a situation. So yeah, we borrowed lenses for like 2 to 3 years, and then we found some budget, and she was the first call. I was like, hey, thank you for, you know, always helping us. We won't get this lens, but we'll get, you know, 2 or 3 of this lens. It's still a sale for them, right? Like, if I can get 3 lenses for the price of what one of those costs, you know, that's still a sale for them. And so shout out to Susan for being a great rep.
So back then, were you mainly Sony cameras?
Yes, still mainly Sony.
Gotcha. Yeah, I left them off of my list here. We use FX6s and FX3s great quite
camera.
A bit too.
Yeah, great camera. And you know, not everybody gets a chance to go to NAB or IDEA or some of these other conferences. You absolutely should find a way to try to get there. But building those, like, even researching who that person is in your area. I know that, you know, no disrespect to B&H or Adorama, but if you have a local camera store or a person who is a regional rep for the brands that you use, whether you're a Sony person, whether you're Panasonic or Red. I mean, I built a relationship with all of them, you know, by going to NAB, by just, hey, who's this person? Who's this? Because I wasn't, even though I was a Sony guy and we had Sony equipment, I wanted to make sure that we wanted to stay in that Sony lane at the time. But we also bought a Red at that time. So built a relationship with them, and the Red rep was the same way. Like, hey, we had this game. I think it was 2014 or 15. Georgia was playing Kentucky at home. And this is the team that went 39-1 and lost in the Final Four. But had Devin Booker, had Karl-Anthony Towns. The Harrison twins were on that team. Like, they were loaded, and we were in a great position to win that game. Referee stepped in at the end. I will say that. But being able to shoot that on a borrowed camera, borrowed lens, it worked out. Talking to the Fuji person, like, hey, we got this game. Talking to the Red person, the Red guy's like, oh, well, I'm going to Savannah that week. I can just drop the camera off at the game. Is there any way you can get a game ticket? We were sold out. He watched the game from the crow's nest. like, and was excited to just be in the building. And so sometimes you got to be able to give something. Sometimes it's free, but build those relationships. Like, I can call those. I haven't worked specifically in sports in 5 years, but there are people that I can call at all of those companies because it wasn't just a transaction that I was building a relationship for. It was actual business or personal relationships. And that was across the board. So building relationships is so important.
Totally agree. Darius, you brought up that game you brought up made me think of like a different topic, but relevant to what you just laid out. Mm-hmm. Like so much of like what I think is important here and what we do is like being ready for things. Justin, you brought up that crazy Buffalo game. Like, yep. For our group, especially like on game day, like what I kind of like the most proud, like small moments are like the ones where we're ready to cover an event when it happens, you know, cause that takes a lot of time. You got to cover a lot of dud games.
Yes.
Before you're ready to cover an awesome game, and you don't know when that awesome game is going to happen. And so if you've got your stuff down, like if you can handle weird, wild games, things as they pop up, you're prepared for the unexpected. Like I think that those are some of the moments that kind of stand out when you're just ready to meet a moment, I guess is a good way to put it. Yeah.
You're prepared. And
yeah.
You know, going back to what we talked about, you know, advice to the, you know, people who are trying to get in position, or whether that's with you or just someone who wants advice, is like, you're probably going to have more low moments, unless you're Karina, who had a lot of high moments with the Warriors.
Yeah.
But you're probably going to have a lot more low moments before you have those highs. And you can't fully enjoy the highs if you don't, you know, if you're not in those moments to where if you're not paying attention in a low moment game, like, oh, the team is, you know, 4-12, like this season is pretty much a dud. I, you know, reference all the time when I was at Ole Miss and we were starting this new show, we went 2-10. But the show was still the priority. We found a way to still make relevant content because we weren't focused on the record. We were focused on, we're trying to build a franchise show because we ended up doing it for basketball and baseball and then the Olympic sports. But we can't focus on what the team's record is. We just have to do our job. But that prepared us for the next season where we became bowl eligible. And then that prepared them for the next season where they went 9-4, won a bowl game. Like, it prepared it, but it started with that 2-10 season. Is you're not preparing in those low moments and when it isn't very sexy and cool and top of the world, then you don't get that full level of enjoyment in it because there's a whole story behind, you know. So lock in is pretty much what we're saying.
Lock in and stay locked in. Like, right. That reminds me of most people are aware of the Minneapolis Miracle game, which is
that was
coming
Stephon
up
Diggs,
on 10
right?
years ago now, which is wild. Not quite, but yeah, Stephon Diggs, walk off touchdown in the playoffs. Game. We'll pretend what happened the week after
didn't happen. Yes.
But like that game, like we were winning the whole game. Saints come back and take the lead with like 20 seconds left or something like that. And like vibes were bad. But like if you don't stay locked in, like you're not going to capture all the awesome moments, mm-hmm. like a walk-off touchdown in the playoffs. If you allow yourself to be affected, I guess, by the fan sentiment or what's going on the field, like if you're not still ready to capture whatever happens, you're going to miss out on potentially franchise level moments. Like
absolutely.
That, so.
And that moment will live forever in history.
Yeah. Right?
Unless, you know, something, you know, it's like, you know, different sport, but kind of a great sentiment is I can't remember what year it was, but Tracy McGrady scoring 13 points in 31 seconds. Like, yeah. If you're not prepared, you're down like, oh, game's over. Let me go pack. Let me go get a head start. Like, if you're not ready for that moment and locked in to the end, that moment lives forever. And if you don't catch it, then, you know, so lock in, high, low, boring game, most exciting game, just be prepared for it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, I mean, working in sports is always like the floor of excitement is always pretty high because you are at a sporting event or, you know, you're at an event. It's a fun thing, but there are some dud games that you got to kind of power through. But yeah, like you were mentioning, there's always a few games that remind you of like the awesome moments that you get to be there for.
Well, if you like a slow ramp up, hopefully the Bears can help you out with that first game. You know, give you a dud to start it off, and you know, let your team get a little experience. And
how are you feeling about all the newness there over the past few years?
Yeah, I mean, hard to go downhill with the talent they have.
Yeah,
I mean, NFC North is unbelievable. I mean, the fact that there was, I know it was only what, like 6 or 7 weeks into the season, all four of them were technically in playoff contention. I think it's just a strong division. So see what they can do differently and what changes are made. And yeah, should be a fun season for sure for everybody up there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. We have our back-to-back international games, which is going to be really cool. On the front end of it, it's a lot of, you guys might be familiar, like you got to like jot down like all the serial numbers of all the equipment you're bringing and like the values of everything. So it's a lot of,
your adapters and everything to charge everything. Yeah.
If you ever are not sure of exactly how much equipment you use on a game day, like go through that process and you'll get a pretty good idea. But, that's where like, we've been lucky enough to play in London, you know, a lot of the past few years. We've had great experiences. Like our football ops, like travel team does an awesome job. Like it's like a regular road trip in a lot of ways. So they make sure it goes very smooth. But like the admin stuff on the front end for everyone, like throughout the organization is a lot. So, excited to double up on that this year, but playing in Ireland, that'll be so cool. Very excited for that.
Yeah, that's super cool. I loved it. I went to London in 2012, I think. And super fun experience.
What with the team?
With the Bears, yeah.
I mean, we know that you have off season, air quotes. But how do you like separate, I mean, or like remove yourself from it? Like what is downtime and you know, taking care of your mental health look like for you?
Yeah. Just like the idea of protecting your own time is something I've worked on for myself and like in the department too. We're far from a perfect setup, but like building in, like if we're, especially if we have a road game coming up, building in like that Friday for like people to not be in the office, you know, cause it's easy to just go to the office cause you know, something will probably pop up. But like, if you figure everything out so that Monday through Thursday takes care of everything, then like you can protect your Friday a little bit or protect the day for you. But that's been like I said, far from a perfect scenario yet, but just trying to be more conscious of that. And then like in the off season, like, yeah. Protect your time. Leave a little bit early. Like as long as you're not leaving anybody hanging out to dry, like enjoy the evenings, enjoy the weekends. I've not always done a great job of that. Especially like evenings during or not during the season. But just being more conscious of that. Don't be afraid to protect your peace a little bit. Cause sports is fun. That's why we all work in it. but like it can like suck you up more than you realize. Like it's exciting and fun, and that's why it happens. But if you don't build in time to not be consumed by it, like that's what'll happen, at least in my experience. So
absolutely.
It finding ways to build out time that is not work is not an easy thing always, especially if you're young and trying to prove yourself, you know. But if you work hard, like people will notice. Doesn't matter if you're working hard at 1 p.m. or 7 p.m.
That is a fact. Yeah. Because not everybody is not everybody's creative works at the same time.
Yeah, true.
You know, and I don't think that I think with any job we feel like, oh, well, this is the office time, right? But for me, I work better on the back half of the day.
Okay.
Into the night. Right. So if I were on a schedule from like a 12 to 8, I would probably be way more productive. Not because I could sleep in.
I was going to say, what time is wake up? 11:45?
No, that's when the brain is really at its peak, is in that 12 to 8. And sometimes it's 5 to 1 a.m. Like it shifts. Like mine isn't just a 8 to 5. That's only time. Like,
is that because you're allowed to drink beers after 5 o'clock? It really kicks in.
You know? Maybe if I drank beer like that, maybe that would. I don't know. It's just something about when everybody else is winding down. That's when I'm kind of winding up, kind of thing. Yeah. So
I hear you. I couldn't be more the opposite, but I hear you.
And that's
I'm perfect, a morning guy, right? For sure. But
yeah, well, like sometimes we're like, oh, well, I need to be here at 8, so you need to be here at 8. It's like, do you want productive me or do you just want present me? Because those aren't often the same. Like, I can be here at 8, but that brain isn't functioning at 8 o'clock. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, and that can be a tough thing to work through, too. Like I like I said, I'm like a morning person, so if I'm going to be super productive, like, there's enough, like, meetings and stuff during the day a lot of times that if I'm going to be productive, it's got to be in the morning. Cause like, even if I block off time in the afternoon, my brain is going to be spent. So like, I'm not going to be productive doing what I need.
Or other quote unquote urgent needs will pop up and help you fill that space. Yeah.
Yep.
Serious. Or like if the day kind of sucks, like you're like, I'm getting out of here. Like you're at the mercy of a lot of different things as the day goes on.
Yep.
So for me, I've learned to not count on the end of the day or the afternoon to get anything done, because that, chances are, that's not happening.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.